Translation. The son of Rohini will also be celebrated as Sankarsan because being sent from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. He will be called Ram because of his ability to please all the inhabitants of Gokul, and he will be known as Balabhadra because of his extensive physical strength. Purport. These are some of the reasons why Balaram is known as Sankarsan, Balaram, or sometimes Ram. In the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, people sometimes object when Ram is accepted as Balaram. But although devotees of Lord Ram may object, they should know that there is no difference between Balaram and Lord Ram. Here, Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states that Balaram is also known as Ram, Rameti. Therefore, it is not artificial for us to speak of Lord Balaram as Lord Ram. Jayadev Goswami also speaks of three Ramas, Parasaram, Raghupati Ram, and Balaram. All of them are Ramas. Lord Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Lord Balaram appears in the mood of the servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said there is Sevya Bhagavan and Sevak Bhagavan. So Sevya Bhagavan is the form of the Lord who is accepting service from all. So that is Lord Krishna. And then Sevak Bhagavan is the Supreme Lord in the form as a servant. So it says the spiritual master is also known to be Sevak Bhagavan. And Balaram is the original spiritual master, or Adi Guru. Because Balaram is engaged in serving Lord Krishna, and it says, therefore, Balaram is experiencing the greatest happiness. So this is how he is Guru. Because one cannot be Guru just by speaking knowledge without realization. Like on one occasion, the devotees were asking Srila Prabhupada very complex answers. I mean, you could give whole seminars on this topic and speak for weeks, you know, how to be happy in Krishna consciousness and approach it from many angles, you know, the sociological angle, the psychological angle, and the individual introspective approach, or the whatever approaches might be there. But a simple answer is that when Krishna is satisfied, all will be satisfied. So in one sense, one knows that Krishna is satisfied if we are satisfied in devotional service. So in order to be happy in devotional service, one must somehow or other satisfy Krishna. Now, that may not be so cheap. Krishna has a very high standard. It is not sufficient to just do the external ritual. We are very easily satisfied with our own performance. Oh, I have come. I'm coming to the temple. Oh, I am praying. Oh, I am chanting. Oh, I'm doing all these things. It is our tendency in our service to every time when we do some service, to spend some time, you know, commemorating how great the surrender was that we've just done. Right? And we sit and we think, wow, you know, I mean, I did such a big yagya, you know, like huge, you know, amazing. I mean, what I just did, you know, and then we have to tell somebody because you can't just repeat it to yourself all the time, you know. Like, and in this way, we sort of operate. Each time when there's a little surrender, we take a break to kind of think, well, you know, that was really some surrender, wasn't it? That really was something, what I just did. And in this way, we are quite easily satisfied. It seems that Krishna still wants more. Krishna wants total surrender. From our present platform of being in the material world, that appears to be like an almost impossible platform too demanding, too high, almost, well, utopian, something not really possible in practical life. And we try to surrender, and then we don't make it. We admit, okay, I'm not a pure devotee, I'm not able to, I'm not super bhakta, you know, I wish I was, but I'm not, and I have to admit it. I'm just weak, and I'm just struggling, and ooh, I've got material desires, and you know, like, I mean, give me a break, kind of thing, right? And then you get a thing like, you know, I mean, we shouldn't condemn devotees, you know, if they can't follow everything. We should just stop condemning and piling guilt on their head, you know. I mean, we should just accept everyone for what they do and what they can do and be happy with it and appreciate it. We should be more appreciative as a movement. I mean, these things we hear. Yeah, and that's, I have no problem with that. I can go along with it. But then again, Krishna seems to deal a little different. Krishna seems to really want everything, and if it's not everything, then it is another birth. And then, yeah, again in the material world. So Krishna wants pure devotional service, but yet it's not based on simply that we have to, by great force and endeavor, somehow or other, make it to surrender. Right? That we have to just force ourselves. No. Krishna consciousness is a process which is very natural, and it automatically builds up. Therefore, rather than biting our teeth, you know, and with great determination try to do the most austere and difficult thing, we are steadily building. It is said that there are two types of kriya, or of spiritual benefits that one may get. That one is called nitya kriya, and the other one is called naimitika kriya. So nitya kriya is the steady pace, the everyday, little by little, making advancement. Like, for example, one may think, tomorrow I will chant 64 rounds. What, 64? I'll chant 128. Right? 128, fantastic. But then, if you don't every day put the quality in at least the 16 rounds, then even if you do a big flash bang, 64 or 128 occasionally, you know, like a big thing, that's appreciated, but it is not as much appreciated as just being steady. It's better to just embrace a fixed number, Sankhya Purvaga Nama Gana Natibi. This principle of building in spiritual life, of being steady. So we are building, we're building new habits, we're building new standards in our life. And in this way, we are getting stronger and stronger. Because, and then it comes natural. It's not like, ooh, I gotta chant those 16 rounds. You know, it's like, ooh, heavy. No, it's just nice to chant, right? At one stage, it becomes so much part of one's life that the thought of not chanting, right? The thought of not getting up one day, and you get up at like 7 o'clock, you know, and you have no rounds chanted, and you feel like, yeah, yeah, what a horrible day, right? Here it is already 7 a.m. and I haven't chanted anything. Oh God, it's going to be totally miserable. So it becomes natural and nice, actually, to be there in the early morning hours when life is still peaceful. And of course, here it's 24 hours. But in many places in the world, those early morning hours are very quiet and peaceful. And even here, they're a little more quiet. And one can just chant naturally, in a relaxed way. So that is the nitya kriya. Nitya kriya means that we gradually develop these new habits, a new taste, and we begin to like it. Then you have Naimittika Kriya. Naimittika Kriya is that special endeavor for special occasions. The 128, right? Or, you know, the big fast, right? Nirjal Ekadasi in Vrindavan, right? Something like that. By 6 o'clock in the morning, you're already parched. Right? Just wonder how long I'm going to last. Things like that. Right? These special endeavors. They're important also because there we break the barriers of routine. I mean, it's very easy to get in the everyday rut, you know, like here we go again, we're doing it again, and yeah, it's. And then to make that special endeavor is kind of making everything fresh again. So, Naimittika Kriya, or the special endeavor, is important to give new life to the Nitya Kriya. If you do Nitya Kriya, the everyday devotional activity, after a little while, it gets a bit stale. Right? You're just kind of like, eh. I mean, I'm doing all this, you know. I'm chanting 16 rounds. I'm following the principles. I'm coming to the morning program. I am, you know. I'm doing it all. But I just don't feel totally blissful. Right? I mean, I don't know what it is. It's just not really happening. Time for some Naimittika Kriya. Time for that little special endeavor. Whether it's an Ekadasi, a Janmashtami, or a marathon, or I don't know what it is, but something, right? Some special endeavor. I mean, just recently on the Gita Jayanti, I knew some devotees who were like, who chanted the whole Bhagavad Gita, right? In one day. That was a yajna, phew, the whole Bhagavad Gita, the Sanskrit translations in one day. Yeah? Serious thing, huh? But, yeah, maybe sometimes a nice thing to do. Of course, not in the middle of the marathon, but maybe when we're in India, you know, like one day, and you just say, okay, now we're going to go to Kurukshetra, and it's going to chant the whole Bhagavad Gita in Kurukshetra. Now, I bet you, if you go to Kurukshetra and you go and sit under that tree where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and you chant the whole Bhagavad Gita in one day, that's going to be a day to remember for a long time, in many ways, you know. Boy, I'll never forget that day. The day that never ended. That long, long, incredible, hot, austere day. But somehow or other we did it, and that was blissful. Right? So, Naimittika Kriya can be like that, that it's very austere while you're in the middle of it. It's almost impossible. Several times on the way you think you're going to snap, but somehow or other, by praying to Krishna and taking shelter in of any possible deity you can, right, you pull through, and then afterwards you have gained so much from that. You've gained strength. It's like the stretching of the muscles, right? It's like sometimes a little painful, but we have to stretch. They speak about three types of circles. They speak about the comfort circle, the stretching circle, and the pain circle. Now, we all know these three circles, right? The comfort circle is like, you know, where is the maha? The stretching circle is that after the maha, there's a little sacrifice to make. The pain circle is when the sacrifice is getting super intense, and when it's a yajna, where it's really, really, you know, taking it to the limit, right? And maybe even beyond it. Is this the limit, or is this beyond the limit? Now, that's the question. When you get to that point, right, you just get totally bewildered. But, no, as long as you can still philosophize about it, it's definitely not beyond the limit. Beyond the limit means a big scream, the primordial scream. Then it's beyond the limit, right? But as long as you're still able to reason and think about it, it's not really beyond the limit. So a little bit of pain circle is good. If we avoid that altogether, then we never become strong. After all, even pain has a purpose. Krishna has created it for some purpose. He has created difficulty for a purpose. Difficulty to make us strong. In Golok Vrindavan, no problems. There are desire trees and kamadenus, kalpataru's kamadenus. All you have to do is you go to a desire tree or a desire cow, and there it is, you know, what you want. Krishna, I want to offer you, well, 56 preparations. Plop, right? And you could just get it like that if you want. You could just get it straight off the tree, and then, okay, here's the fixed six, here's all the preps, right? But of course, the residents in the spiritual sky, they don't do that. They would never, ever do that. No way. It would be possible, but no, they wouldn't let the opportunity to cook for Krishna be taken away by some tree. Forget it. Right? No way. They are themselves very eager to spend all the hours, you know, making the preparations, although they don't have to. It is said that in Vaikuntha, the ladies are sweeping the big marble palaces with brooms, etc. But there's no dust. So why are they sweeping when there's no dust? Don't you know that sweeping is meant for the pleasure of Krishna, not to take away dust? We would never do it if there was no dust, right? Until somebody finally writes in, I want to be cleaned or something like that, right? Then we feel compelled. It's too embarrassing. I guess now we have to do it. So we need the dust. So this is the idea, that we need the struggle. If there is no struggle, you become very weak. You can see that in places where people are all on the dole, you know, they're on the dole, they never work, and the money is just coming in, and they become very weak. They can't handle any more austerity after that. And in Europe, you can really see that, because in Western Europe, the dole is really well developed and everybody's got it, and it's as good as minimum wage, so why would you work, you know? And I guess Australia is not much different. And then you have other countries, right, those Eastern European countries, where the kids, you know, still had to go on a bicycle to school, you know, 30 kilometers every day, in wind and rain and storm, you know, like, and they grew up like that. And they're tough. They're tough. You can't knock them down. Right? They're just so tough. They just go and determined, etc. And then the guys that grew up in the other world, you know, oh, do I really have to put my socks on, you know? And my shoes. Do I have to tie the laces of my own shoes and carry all these books? Oh, it's so austere. Oh, I don't know. Like, it's so hard to be a devotee. This is not meant to be like some sort of, like, you know, rah-rah austerity class, you know, that, like, we should go out there, you know, and just do the austerities so that we become strong and develop some personal power and some character, you know, so that we don't become weaklings, you know. It's not meant to be something like that. But rather, it's meant to be that, well, we can think about, there is a value in austerity, and there's a purpose. I mean, Krishna has designed this material world like that. The reason for distress in this world is obvious, so that we can conquer, so that we can develop that strength. For us to practice, to develop the service attitude against the odds. The odds are there to help us to put some more endeavor into it. So Naimittika Kriya is very important. If you never go out into this area of austerity, then spiritual life becomes dry and complacent, and you start wondering, like, well, you know, I just don't know if I can maintain it. It's like, it's heavy. 4 regulated principles, 16 rounds, 4 a.m. getting up. I mean, these are heavy numbers, all right? And it's getting a bit intense to maintain. intends to just every day again, and with the years, you know, it's like, it just doesn't work anymore on competition. In the beginning, it may be, you know, like a little bit of reputation may do the job, you know, like, I'm getting up at before 3 o'clock every day. He's getting up before 3 o'clock every day, you know. So, wow. He is like very advanced, you know, very advanced. It's like, I'm getting up before 3 o'clock every day. I'm very advanced. They're all in Maya, you know. I'm already chanting. They're still not up, you know. Hare Krishna, look, you know. Hare Krishna. God, I've already made 6 rounds done, and nobody's up yet. I'm so Krishna conscious. What's wrong with that? Now, the mind can come up with all these things, and although it may sound childish, it works like that. The mind works like that. We may not fully sell out to these things, but the mind does say these things. I mean, you try it. If you get up real early, your mind does tell you, you know, like, God, you know, I'm the only one. I'm the only one. So, like this, we are, the mind is very, very eager to jump on it. Mind is totally childish. Totally childish. We look at it like, oh, that's too childish. But the mind is relishing all this childish self-glorification and aggrandizement, etc. So in the beginning, we can, that can inspire us quite a bit. But after some time, that doesn't do it anymore, and you need something new, you know. You need some new inspiration, and like, I'm just not inspired. And yeah, it's like, I don't know what it is, I'm not inspired anymore. Time for some naimitika kriya, time for something special. Doesn't matter what it is, that special can be either a special endeavor in the area of preaching. It can be a special endeavor in some area of sadhana, right? I mean, if we make a special endeavor, like for example, if we decide, and now I'm really going to read the Bhagavatam, I'm really going to do it, right? No. Now I'm really into it. I'm going to, every day, get a few hours of Bhagavatam, and you do it every day, and really going to study the Bhagavatam. And if you do that for a month or for some time, you feel there's some effect of this, right? Or just, well, I'm going to go on a pilgrimage to the Dham, I'm really going to do it, I'm going to go to the holy places, and when we're in the Dham, we're really going to do it. Like recently, I went to Mayapur. I was invited by a group of Swiss devotees and congregation to go there, and they wanted to do seminars, right? So, okay, they paid my ticket, so I was ready to surrender. And then I wound up having to do 6 hours of teaching every day. 6 hours of teaching, you know, like it's austere. Yeah? When you're not used to it, you know, I'm not used to it. I'm not a school teacher. I'm not the type also. Sit straight. Pay attention, you know, like kids, and after a while I just go, shut up, you stupid kids. I wouldn't have the patience for something like that, you know. Some kids that sit there all day. They don't want to learn that. So, I was thinking, 6 hours teaching every day. Austere. And it had to be in German as well, which is double austere, you know. Deutsch. I happened to learn it in school because I'm from Europe, but I was austere. So it was a great austerity for me, actually, doing it. My mind was really flipping out. But I was in the holy Dham, right? And that was good. That was good. And now, afterwards, I still get the effect of the fact that I was there in the holy Dham, you know, like several times I'm remembering the Dham, and it's kind of giving me a bit of a boost. Yeah, it worked. And so now I'm writing thank you letters to these devotees for taking me. And that's really how it is. That's why we go there. And we don't just go there to have pizza and French fries in the greasy spoon, you know. We go there to do something special in the spiritual sense, right? To go to these holy places, to chant more rounds, to read and all these things. So spiritual life is a balance between these two things. Balaram, Bala, or the strength of Balaram, stands for spiritual strength. Right? Spiritual strength, Balaram was, of course, born with spiritual strength. He appeared with it. But that's because he's the Supreme Lord. But we conditioned souls are tatastha shakti. That is different, marginal energy. The Supreme Lord is never ever under the influence of the material energy. He's always full of spiritual strength. But the nature of tatastha shakti is that one can be either spiritually strong or spiritually weak. That is, both these things are possible for all jivas. Therefore, there is no particular jiva that just comes into this world full of spiritual strength. No. And especially not in this age of Kali. Right? Of course, there may be a Nietzsche Siddha here and there who appears, but how many of those are there? So, therefore, nobody is born spiritually strong. Everybody is spiritually weak. Right? And we can walk around and cut the profile, you know, like... got the dhoti, got the sari, got the whole thing, the tilak in the right place, and the right size of neck beads, you know, like big or small, I mean, long or with little designs and silver in between, or gold or whatever you got, you know. Got the whole devotee profile, a few kavachas here and there, got my C-minus ring, you know, C-this, my that. I'm cutting my Vaishnav profile, you know, Vaishnav. Right? But how much Vaishnav are we really? Right? It's a role. We play a role. We've played so many roles before, you know, it was all black, a little hole here, a pin there, a ring there, and it was cool, right? It was just, we were ready to shock people, and it was a profile. And then the profile changed. The profile changes all the time. Somebody's totally punk with spikes and everything, and then, well, but then... the hormones are doing its work and wanna get married, time to settle down. And just starts thinking like that. And of course, well, but how does that fit in the middle of the spikes and the whole thing? No problem. Just get rid of the spikes. Take a few rings out, leave a few small ones, right? Now start wearing trendy black clothes instead of like the total outrageous ones. And this way you're still punk, but not totally outrageous punk anymore. And then it's okay. You can get a job like that and, you know, in this way save some money and get ready for the next stage where you settle down and you're there. And eventually the punk suit changes for the yuppie suit, right? The up-and-coming, you know, career maker, right? And like... gradually there was a shift of role, you know, new role, right, now we're... And then, you know, so I don't know where we were, what role we were in before we joined, but anyway, one day suddenly we jumped in the Vaishnav profile, and here we are, cutting it, right? But deep inside, what is it? A little person full of doubt, you know, like I'm wondering, oh God, Maya is so strong, how am I going to make it? And it's like, it's not easy, and so many already went down. And I mean, if you look at the statistics, how much chance do I really have? I'm totally insecure. But anyway, you know, Hari Bok, walking around real cool. Right? So, something like that. So we have to give it depth. It's not going to come automatically. Although it says that one automatically makes spiritual advancement in the process of devotional service, prakasante mahatmanaha, that part of the automatic advancement is that we get more realization and more insight, and then that we become more conscious that we have to now do something about it, right? And that we have to make a conscious endeavor. Therefore, we see that as devotees are advancing, they become more serious about making something out of their spiritual life. Yes, the Bhagavatam, it is our shelter. Then, let's go for it. Let's get into it. Let's read that Bhagavatam. Let's make it part of our life. Our rounds, right? Without rounds, where will we be without these rounds? Then, let's do it. Let's put the energy into it. So, spiritual life, if you really look at it, it's a matter of managing our energy. So the Bhagavatam is also discussing this point. The point that one has to redirect his energy, because we have only so much of it. And with the years, it's getting less and less. When we were kids, right, we just running up and down the stairs 10 times for no reason, just for the heck of it. Right? Running around like crazy, but with no purpose. Then, you know, we grew up a little and the energy level went down, but we got a little more purpose. So with the years, our sense of purpose is increasing, but our energy level is going down. Right? So better, while we still have some energy, to use it for Krishna. Instead of to wait, you know, until
we're totally decrepit, finished, and it's trying. Well, at least I'm still chanting 16 rounds. It takes me the whole day, but somehow or other, I'm finishing that.
Oh, boy. So that's, of course, very nice if people at that stage of life take to Krishna consciousness. But is it so much nicer if one could use his energy at an earlier stage? So, we must reserve our energy for the Krishna conscious activities and distribute it nicely, balance it nicely. This is the way to last a lifetime in Krishna consciousness. By taking some of the energy and put it into our spiritual practices, reserve some energy for that, and then put some energy in doing some substantial service for Krishna. Feeling of actual satisfaction, doing the right thing, and one becomes effulgent with happiness. So it is said that there was a great scholar who met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but next to the devotees, he looked dull. The devotee was so effulgent, he looked totally dull. So spiritual life is meant to be like that, ecstatic from one moment to the next. Can I stop for questions if there are any? Then go for your life. Yes.
When Lord Krishna was born, he was born with 4 arms. And when Lord Balaram was born, was he also born with 4 arms?
No. Lord Krishna, of course, was not born but appeared before his parents. And with 4 arms in the full form of Lord Vishnu, with dress and helmet and all the ornaments, etc. And just to show that here, really, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared, so that nobody later on could argue, well, you know, Krishna was actually not the Supreme Lord, he was an ordinary person, maybe he had some special qualities, you know, but he was not God, you know. So, but in the case of 1, 2, 3, 4 arms, it's pretty obvious that he's not an ordinary person, right? Because so that's why Krishna appeared with 4 arms. But Lord Balaram, he was in the womb of Devaki, and then he was transferred, and then he appeared in Vrindavan. So Lord Balaram just appeared there from the womb of Rohini, and he appeared just like an ordinary child in that sense. He didn't appear like a four-arm form and then transform itself. Now, it is also said that Yasoda, when she in Vrindavan gave birth to that daughter, that Yogamaya daughter, that actually she did not just give birth to that daughter. She also gave birth to a son at the same time. Yasoda had twins. She actually had a little boy as well, and that was Krishna. So it is said that Krishna appeared simultaneously in Mathura and in Vrindavan. And when Vasudev brought that form of Krishna across the Yamuna to Vrindavan and put that child, exchanged that child for the girl that Yasoda also had taken birth of, it said then those two forms of Krishna became one. And at that point, so then there was only one. And later when Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Dwarka, that same Krishna became again two. But this is kind of very private, only known to the intimate devotees. But actually it is there within the scriptures, and the acharyas have mentioned this. So just see, not only Balaram appeared in Vrindavan, but Krishna also. So in Vrindavan, Krishna appeared also with two arms. He didn't come first with four arms. He just came with two arms, and so did Balaram appear with two arms. Because in Vrindavan there are no four arms. What are you supposed to do with four arms in Vrindavan? That's for Vaikuntha. And Vrindavan, no four arms, two. So how could Balaram have appeared with four arms in Vrindavan? Not possible. Would be rasadas, mixing of mellows, out of place. Any other questions? So it is said that Balaram was also known as Baladev, right? In the Harivamsa, there's a story, there's the story of Pralambasura, which you also have, of course, in the Bhagavatam. And there it's described how when the cowherd boys were wrestling and the one party that was losing had to carry the other party, it is said that then Pralambasura carried Balaram because he thought, let me first try for Balaram, because Krishna has proven to be too powerful. So let me first get rid of Balaram. And of course, another reason was that Pralambasura was a big sense gratifier, and Balaram stood for the original guru, so he had an aversion against guru. Right? So he wanted to destroy the teacher of spiritual life, so he took Balaram with him. And it said then, Pralambasura became bigger and bigger, and he had a big blackish form. And Pralambasura was a big sanskritifier, and therefore he was a big enjoyer, and he considered himself very powerful. So on his big black head, with copper hair, he had a little crown. And his eyes were getting big and round, as big as cartwheels. And there was a light coming from these eyes, as brilliant and blazing as the sun. Right? So he had these piercing, bright eyes, and he was just carrying Balaram away, and Balaram was kind of a little shocked by it all, and he called out to Krishna and said, Krishna, Krishna, what am I supposed to do? And Krishna said, Balaram, you know who you are, right? You remember, just you know who you are, you know what to do. And then Balaram took action, and he hit this demon on the head, right, with his fist. And it is said in the Harivamsa, written by Vyasadeva, that then the head of Pralamba went right in the torso. It just went inside. And at that point, all the demigods that were watching the whole scene called out, Baladev, Baladev, he is Baladev. He is the very powerful deity. Right? So that's how he got that name, Baladev, it is said in the Harivamsa. Of course, the name of Baladev is an eternal name, but sometimes it's forgotten, and then in the past times it's again revealed. Right? So in this way, it was revealed, and Lord Balaram is very important, because it is said that Lord Krishna, he gives us transcendental knowledge. Lord Krishna is Govinda, is acting as the instructing guru, and he gives the sword of transcendental knowledge, like the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. But without praying to Lord Balaram, one will not have the strength to lift that sword of knowledge. So it is in particularly Baladev who gives us the strength to lift the sword of knowledge. So that sounds all very mystic, and there is a mystic aspect of just praying to Balaram, but the other aspect of getting the special mercy of Balaram is by doing what Balaram likes to do the most, serve Krishna. When we serve Krishna, then naturally Balaram notices us straight away. Hey, he's doing my job. Well, he's doing it nicely as well. Mercy is there. And immediately the spiritual strength is there. What is spiritual strength? Ultimately, spiritual strength means taste. Prabhupada said it's all based on taste. If there's taste, then there's faith. It's hard to have faith when there's no taste. Krishna consciousness is the best thing in the world. It's totally the most exalted, most wonderful process I've read in the Bhagavatam. But I have no taste for it. Then it's very hard to have faith. But if we have taste, right, it's the best. It's the greatest. It's most wonderful. Yes. So therefore, this taste is very important. And this taste will come as soon as Balaram is seeing our service attitude. Right? Then he'll give us the taste. And then, yes, our faith becomes strong. Then we have spiritual strength. Then, who cares about Maya, even if she comes in front of us with all the attributes? Maya. Like, get out of my way. I'm busy serving Krishna, right? Really not interested. Like Prahlad Maharaj was saying, the material energy, I'm not very afraid of the material energy, he said. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the conditioned souls who are suffering. Right? So, when one is satisfied in spiritual life, yes, then it is like that. So that is why that name Ram, Ram means complete spiritual satisfaction. So it is no wonder that Bala Ram come together. Because Bala without Ram wouldn't work. Yeah. It wouldn't be possible to have Bala, spiritual strength, without Ram, without the happiness in spiritual life. So we must also allow ourselves to be happy. Many times we just don't allow it. No. It's all austerity, spiritual life. It's just, there's no nectar in it. It's just austerity, and the nectar comes much later, We're just not ready for it yet, and we have to just perform austerity. So, this is it, austerity. We have to do austerity. No, even from day one, it's nectar. There's nectar of prasada, nectar of the darshan, nectar of the kirtan, and so many ways of finding the nectar. Right? So one has to, from day one, become a nectar hunter. If we don't hunt for the nectar, if we don't look for the nectar, where is the nectar? I need some nectar. You've got some. Do you have some nectar somewhere? Yeah? Huh? You sure? You don't have anything? You gotta have something stashed away, maybe a little water from Radha Kunt at home or something like that. See? I need it. Tomorrow? Yeah? You must bring this water of Radha Kunt to the temple, and we all need it. Yeah? We all want some of that. Some nectar. See? Everyone's got some. So, we gotta hunt for it. We gotta get it. Tomorrow we're gonna get water of Radha Kunt. Hey. There's plenty of nectar out there. We just got to be eager for it. Okay, I'll stop with that. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.